There's such wisdom in this little book that I read to you from Sunday, Lao Tzu, Tao, and Wu Wei, that I thought perhaps I would continue reading some of these things too. This one is called Precepts. Which is nearer, a name or a person? Which is more, personality or treasure? Is it more painful to gain or to suffer loss? Extreme indulgence certainly greatly wastes. Much hoarding certainly invites severe loss. A contented person is not despised. One who knows when to stop is not endangered. He will be able, therefore, to continue. The next one is the virtue of greatness. Extreme perfection seems imperfect. Its function is not exhausted. Extreme fullness appears empty. Its function is not exercised. Extreme straightness appears crooked. Great skill, clumsy. Great eloquence, stammering. Motion conquers cold. Quietude conquers heat. Not greatness, but purity and clearness are the world's standards. And the next is limitation of desire. When the world yields to Tao, racehorses will be used to haul manure. When the world ignores Tao, war horses are pastured on the public common. There is no sin greater than desire. There is no misfortune greater than discontent. There is no calamity greater than acquisitiveness. Therefore, to know extreme contentment is simply to be content. The next one is seeing the distance. Not going out the door, I have knowledge of the world. Not peeping through the window, I perceive heaven's Tao. The more one wanders to a distance, the less he knows. Therefore, the wise man does not wander about, but he understands. He does not see things, but he defines them. He does not labor, yet he completes. Those are words of tremendous wisdom that we stop to think about. Bible reading this evening is Psalm 46, one of my very favorites. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore will not we fear, though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof, Selah. There is a river, the streams whereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God shall help her, and that right early. The heathen raged, the kingdoms were moved. He uttered his voice, the earth melted. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge, Selah. Come, behold the works of the Lord. What desolations he has made upon the earth. He maketh wars to cease unto the end of the earth. He breaketh the bow and cutteth the spear in sunder. He burneth the chariot in the fire. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the heathen. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Selah. That one psalm tells about the experiences that a soul goes through on the way to the divine. Because indeed, you feel all of this movement within you. The river that they speak of course, is the River Jordan or the spinal channel, and the holy city is your consciousness, the place of Jerusalem. And all of these things take place. But the secret of the whole thing is to be still and know that you are God, that I am God, the great I am within you. Now I'd like to start the question and answer period tonight. I'd like to ask you, why, if you are God in human form, if only God exists, why is it necessary to seek him? Anyone want to answer that? Don't all speak at once. David?
Well, I think that while God is the light that expresses himself through us, we don't realize our oneness with him, with that light. And we think of ourselves as a separate person, a separate entity. And we don't identify ourselves with all of life everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so the process of realizing, we realize to a certain extent how much of life pours through us, but we don't realize all of it. And so it's the process of realizing more and more of what that life is.
What is the process for realizing that? Somebody else have an answer to that?
Time and space.
I beg your pardon?
Time and space.
Time and space? Is that the process?
Yeah.
Will you explain that to me?
Well, I think it says it's more either time and space or will be man. And I think that man, the son of man at least, is limited in terms of perception and in terms of being aware of one's identity, you know, as experiences a limited identity because of time and space. And when a person is not subject to time and space, then they're not bound by the law of the man any longer, but they're bound by the law of the God.
But that's not a process, Terry.
Well, the process of change. Time is a process.
But how do you go about doing that?
To surrender.
Well, how do you surrender? What means do you use to do that?
To stop thinking of yourself. Your small self, and think of God.
Well, that's a few things. But are there any other ways? Anybody else have the answer to that? Fine.
Be still and know that I'm God. Meditation.
You just heard that. That's true. But do we not also have the various paths of yoga, which teach us certain techniques, which will take us to this realization of our oneness with God? This is really true. Now, all of these things that Jerry mentioned, there are two more, Jerry, time, space, the Word, and the atom are said to be the four beings before the throne of God. But if God created all things and nothing was created except by him, then those things are also of God. However, it is the delusive force which has clouded man's nature. In the beginning, in his descent from himself, there was total purity. There was total realization of oneness. In fact, it was not a realization, it was an existence. I am that I am. But then, of course, the mind came into play. And the mind of the soul then started to function according to the operation of the mind instead of according to its knowledge of its true self. And the way the mind functions is then to be attracted to the senses. And the senses, in turn, are attracted to sense objects. And so gradually a whole garment is built around the soul, a garment of darkness, of ignorance, so to speak. And the soul ceases to identify itself with its original pure state. And this has happened lifetime after lifetime, incarnation after incarnation, until man thinks of himself now as being totally separated from God. And it is only when he has gone through many, many lifetimes, many experiences, when he has brought suffering upon himself to the degree when he can't stand it any longer, and he feels that he must have some help. He must find some answers. At that time, he then lifts his eyes, his consciousness to God, and he starts on the spiritual path. He puts his feet on the spiritual path. Now, he chooses many paths. In the beginning, every great one who has come upon this earth to lift mankind has given the absolute truth. And that truth is his own realization of God through his own experience. But after that great one passes, then an organization almost always builds around the name of that one, the teachings of that one. Churches are established, tabernacles are established, organizations are established, and therefore you have a new religion which starts, and the more that you have of this type of thing, the farther away you get from the actual truth that the Master taught. Now this is too bad, but that's because it isn't left in its original state. Somebody always thinks that they have to revise it. I had originally the books on Karma Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, Jnana Yoga that Swami Vivekananda wrote, and they were in his own words, and they were very, very beautiful. Somehow, I gave one of those away, and I got another one to replace it, and this one was revised by Swami Nikalananda, who thought he would put it in more comprehensive form, and so he took away from the spirit. Certainly the language may be a little better, but he took away from the original spirit that you felt when you read these books written by the man who really experienced this truth and gave it. And it has been that way down through history. And it is too bad. The disciple never knows more than the guru. Now they can come to know as much if they are willing to go through what the guru goes through. But they will not know enough to change the truth of that particular soul because they didn't live in that soul's body. They didn't go through the same experiences of truth, and therefore they are in no position to set up a separate state, a separate idea, a separate opinion of what that truth was. And it could not be done. Now, in all that is given to us by the Great One, it is a letting go of the pull of the great, the outer universe, and the taking hold of that which will take you within yourself. Now the three main paths, of course, are the path of Jnana, which is the path of wisdom, which takes you out of the darkness into the light. In other words, you gain this knowledge through pure wisdom. That wisdom is gained through pursuing the path of God through the mind. And then we have the path of bhakti, or the path of love. And that is gradually coming to see God in every form. So in that case, hate is replaced by love, dissension by togetherness, and so on and so forth, until the whole world becomes love. And then the next, or the third greatest path, is the path of karma yoga. And that path is the path of action or of service. It is the path of total selflessness. Now each one comes with their own special personality, their own special identity, and their own special mission in God. And each one is different. Nobody can be like anybody else exactly. And nobody can get somebody else's God realization for them. But there are some things which must be common in all paths to every man who is going to serve God as a God person. And the one is the love of people, the desire to forget yourself in service to God, and in service to God in all of the forms which he has created. And there is no deviation from that, regardless of how God made you, what your particular path is, or anything else, because if you're going to serve, those things are specific and definite requirements. They must be, because it's a tough road that you're going to walk. You're going to be dealing with the whole world, no matter how that small that world is around you. And there are going to be people who come to you with every kind of a temperament and every sort of an idea. And some are yanis, they follow the path of wisdom. Some are lovers, they follow the bhakti path. And some are those who love to serve God in their fellow men. And so each one who comes before you comes with all of his humanness. And you have to take that humanness into consideration when you're dealing with them. And you can't take personal exception to it. You may chastise them, you may call it to their attention, but you cannot take personal exception to it. Because if you do, then you are still reacting humanly. In order to work with all the people, there must be some reaction, because you're working in a world of duality. And the reaction comes so that you can do the work necessary. You react, but you are master of the whole situation, and you recover very, very quickly. There are many people who think that they have God realization who have not gone to the highest rung of the ladder and over it. And they set themselves up as spiritual teachers. And I read a story the other day which I thought was very interesting. There was a wise man by the name of Sutra in India. And he had great wisdom. A friend of his came to him one day and told him that there was a great holy man in the neighborhood and he'd like to go and see him. And Sutra said, yes, he would. So he went before the holy man and he bowed and he told him the Lord be with him and how privileged he was to see him. And then he said to him, do you have any fire? The holy man said, no, I have no fire. So he waited a minute and he said, I have great need of a fire. Do you have any fire? No, said the holy man, I don't have any fire. So a few minutes went by and he said, are you sure you don't have a fire? He said, I really have great need of a fire. And the holy man became angry. He said, I have already told you 3 times. Are you a fool that you cannot understand the fact that I do not have any fire? So the man sat there very, very quietly. Pretty soon he said, but I really do have need of a fire. Are you sure that you don't have any fire? And the saint became so angry that he picked up the stick and he beat the sutra, the figure, until the stick broke. And the fakir sat there in perfect calm. He said, I thought when I came in here I smelled the smoke of fire. And he said, now I have found out where it is. And the holy man, realizing that the fire that he was beating up was within himself, begged him forgiveness and thanked him for the lesson that he had taught him. So we all come with a great deal of fire within us. And we're willing to, right now, when somebody says something we don't like, look what you said to me. Look what you did to me. Poor little me. I want to retaliate. I want to get back at you. Is that the way you should be? You should remain calm. You should not react except momentarily. You can't, it's coming, you can't help that. It comes at you. It's a thing of nature. But you can remain in complete control of yourself and therefore in control of the whole situation. And it has to be like that. Now these three things, these three paths that we talk about, each have their own special technique. Now there are many techniques that are used. We have for instance, the technique of the spiritual eye. We have the Hongsaw technique. We have the Om technique. And then we have the tremendous initiation of Kriya Yoga, which teaches you to revolve the life current around the spine and through the brain. Now, all of these will help the spiritual aspirant to go ever higher in his God realization. But there's one thing you've got to remember. When you focus your attention on the path, on these particular things, they are given to you but for a purpose, and that is to teach you to concentrate so that you may meditate upon God alone. That's why they are given to you, so that you may meditate upon Him alone. Now, you see, while everybody has to do these things, they think in the beginning, especially in America, we're a do-it-yourself people. We always want to know, what can I do? We're people of action. We're not content to sit still, you see, and let the world go by or let it come to us. We've got to get out there and be doing something, which is good. But nevertheless, when you are out there following all these things, you are working on the things that you think should be gotten rid of, and you're attempting to do the things that you hope will take you to God. And so there is constant attention on the fact that you are doing something. Whereas, there is a higher method of putting your full attention, of course the light of the spiritual eye, this technique is one of them, and the Hong Sao technique, or the Om technique. The Hong Sao is to watch your breath, the Om technique is to listen for the sound of God, and these are the highest techniques that can be given to you, and it is a blending of the sound and the light together which will take you into the oneness of God, because God is both of these things. But to take your mind off of the path and to put your mind only on Him is the greatest way, because there must be complete stillness. Your mind must be at rest. It must not be engrossed with things. It must come to the point, as I have mentioned before, when you even give up the desire for God realization. When you are so totally surrendered to God that you say, all right, Lord, if it be thy will, then let it happen to me in this incarnation. But if it is not thy will, I accept that. And I still give you all of myself. Use me as you will. That is true surrender, true dedication. And every soul must come to that point if they are to go beyond duality. So you think of God. You visualize His light. You listen for His word, which is the sound of Om, and this high-pitched sound which you hear mostly in your right ear. If you can't hear in your right ear, then listen in your left. But as I've told you, and some of you, I'm sure, are very familiar with it, it's a like that. Sort of like one part of Kriya, isn't it? And it gets so that all of a sudden it'll be going on inside of you and you will become conscious of it where you were not before. You were not before. So the purpose then of doing all of these things, to realize your oneness with God, is to remove all of the veils of ignorance, the various garments with which you have clothed the soul on your way out from the purity of your own divinity. You shed garment after garment after garment until such time as the soul is stripped naked, absolutely naked, and stands by itself ready to be consumed into the one light and fire of God. It is not an easy path, and yet we make it so much more difficult for ourselves than we need to. We build up fears. We build up ideas of what is required of us and what we can and cannot do. And we feel surrounded. And so many people, as I've said before, have said to me, but what you ask of me is so difficult. And yet they come with burden after burden on their shoulders until they're just snowed under. And they fail to think how difficult it is to be the way they are and to carry the burden on their shoulders that they're packing when they come in. And the simple way is to fix your mind on God, to look for His light in the center of your forehead, to listen to His voice in your ear. The three paths of yoga which I have described are the hands, or the head, the hands, and the heart. Because the one, the yoni, is the head, and the bhakti is the heart, and the karma is the hands which serve. So this is a threefold path, you see. And that is necessary in the beginning, because everybody has to make a start. As I've said so many times, you can't say a start in the kindergarten of life and expect to graduate from the university tomorrow. You have to go through every class. You have to study the lessons. You have to take the tests and pass the examinations before you can be promoted to the next grade, because the consciousness expands gradually. It is like the child growing in the mother's womb. A seed is planted. That seed is the result of two seeds coming together and forming the one cell, or the father Abraham. And then comes all of the growth of the idea body. Then all of the growth of the astral or the electrical body, which controls the nervous system. And then finally, the outer form or the growth or the physical body takes form. All of this comes from just one cell. And so, from this one cell, the mother's body starts to expand and expand and expand. In the beginning, there are what they call stretch pains. And the same is true of your consciousness, because the Christ child within you is growing. It is getting ready to be born. And so it expands on a gradual basis. It grows on a gradual basis until all of a sudden it is born out of the womb of ignorance, and you come into the light of God's world and into the light of the knowledge of who and what you are in God. And when you come face to face with that great light, when you are filled with the ecstasy, with the bliss and the power of His infinite presence, it is worth every little tiny bit you had to go through, every particle that you had to pay for it. But you can lessen that if you will stop putting yourself in the position of continuing to do the things which build karma, which is not good, and rather fix your full attention upon God, surrender all things to Him, and let Him do the work. We don't have to do it. We can let Him do it, because He is inside of us. Don't forget, He is our real self. He is the one who lives within us, who makes us move and breathe and think and have our being, who gives us all power, who keeps our body constantly charged, just like a battery must be charged in order that the car will run. So this battery of life within us has to be recharged constantly from the infinite in order to keep on going. There is no greater work on this earth than to find your oneness with God. And when you have found that oneness, there is no greater work on this earth than to let Him express Himself through this form which He has created, in whatever way is His will, in order that the world through Him might be changed. Now this world as it stands is in a sorry plight. We have but to turn on our television set, to pick up a newspaper, turn on the radio, to see the things that are going on around us, and it is horrible. And it isn't going to stop until we, as individuals, put our feet on the spiritual path and do that which is necessary to change the world within ourselves. You have to change yourself before you can change one single thing outside. You may make superficial changes, but the real change will not come. Your world, your life, is not going to be complete. You're not going to find contentment and fulfillment and all of the things your heart desires until you first make the effort. Because it says that we have to seek God and His kingdom first, and then all of the other things are to be added unto us. Now this is not a false promise nor a false premise. It is the truth. That's the way it is. And yet we always are saying, give me, give me, give me. Do this, do that, do something else for me, Lord. And then, if you do that, I will make special penance and I will do something for you. It doesn't work that way. You do your part first, and that is to totally accept the fact that God exists, and then give Him your total love and give Him total surrender. Accept Him and surrender to Him, and you will find that all of these other things will follow after. Now, the reason they don't when you first make the effort is because you don't stay with it. You take a dab at it here and there. Every one of us has done this. And we're always going to make a new resolution. Tomorrow is a new day, and believe me, we're going to program everything. We're going to follow through. Sometimes we can't avoid it when we don't do that. But at least we can make a start, and we can stick with it. And if we try hard enough, for a long enough period of time, we're going to accomplish what we set out to do, what our goal is. And nothing and nobody can stop us. The man who sits with his hands folded in his lap and lets the world go by, contributing not very much to it, who hasn't found his place and therefore not his destiny, is in very, very sorry shape. And he stands at the gate begging alms while all of life, the grand procession of life, passes him by. To me, life is a magnificent thing. I love to live it, and I live every moment of it to its fullness. All of its joy, its sorrow, its love, its laughter, its suffering, its peace, its everything. I live it because that is what God is, and I am that, and so are you, without exception. Now, the things that come to us to test us are difficult. But if we look at them, not as punishment, but as tests, as opportunities for growth, how do you measure up when something really terrific happens to you or some member of your family? Are you the master of yourself? Are you able to control your feelings, your actions, your reactions, and go on like a God person, or do you let it put you down, and do you have a pity me party? It's up to you as to what choice you make. And that choice is a very important part. And again, attitude determines altitude. Because regardless of what you have to go through, if your attitude is positive, if it is what it should be, if you take your mind off your little self and say, Lord, what am I to learn through this experience? Lord, use me in whatever way you will. I surrender myself to you. I don't feel any self-pity at all. I don't feel either big nor little. I am whatever you have made me to be this moment. And I belong to you with every fiber of my being. Without you, I am nothing. Then things start to happen. And God pours His mercy upon you. He pours His grace upon you. He makes your way light. He walks before you, lighting your path. And He showers His abundance on you in ways that you don't dream of. And don't forget that abundance doesn't just come in the form of money, of things, but it comes through grace. It comes through the love of good people. It comes through the beauty of nature. It comes through the service and the friendship that you get from others and that you're able to get to give to others. It comes in so many ways, these bounteous blessings of God, if we would only think of it. But this world has come to the point where it worships the almighty dollar. It worships the power that is inherent in the world and not the power that is inherent in God. Don't forget on the original silver dollar, the dollar of this country, it says, in God we trust. In God we trust. How far have we come from that? And yet we're reaching out and reaching out and reaching out. Somebody told me, somebody from another town just the other day, that they had listened to Billy Graham give a talk over the television, and that he was having a question and answer period. And somebody asked him the question, I think it was, does Christ have jurisdiction over all of the rest of the world? I think there are supposed to be 800 million of them, as I remember the story was told. Does he have jurisdiction over all of these worlds? Would somebody like to answer that? What do you think? Yes?
I would say that Christ does, but not the man Jesus. That Christ, by whatever name you call him.
You think he has jurisdiction over all the world? 800 million of them. Well, would you like to know what I was told that Billy Graham said? He said, no, he doesn't. This is the only world he has jurisdiction over because this is the only world where everybody is a sinner. How do you like that for an answer? I think it's terrible. I think it is absolutely terrible to so condemn all of the people of this world so that the only reason we have a Christ is because we are all such miserable sinners. I think the reason we have a Christ is because we are all children of God. And we have forgotten that. And he came to teach us the way back, to realize who and what we are. That we have but one common Father, and that Father is the Father of all of the universes in the world. That there is but one Christ, and that consciousness, that power, is a motivating life of every single atom of space in this universe and all that beyond. And I think he has taken form in every single man, woman, and child in this whole universe and beyond. Because he is the Word that came forth and was clothed in a garment of flesh. Don't forget that it was Paul who said that Jesus was the man, Jesus the man was the only begotten Son of God. Jesus himself never said that. Never. I would prefer to universalize the Christ, to think not of sin, but rather of salvation. To think not that all of those I work with and I myself am not miserable sinners, but rather that we are children of God, the one Father God, that his one life, his one intelligence, his one love, his one power is flowing through each and every one of us equally. And that if we could only realize that oneness inside of ourselves, what a beautiful transition this world could go through. And that's what we're aiming for in all that we do, with the full attention upon God, to love him, to serve him in every act of our life, with everyone who comes before us. To curb our thoughts, our words, and our actions of anger, of dislike, of all of the things that come up to make us feel antagonistic one to the other. And instead, for every single thing that comes at us, to give love, to give understanding, to give forgiveness, even as we ourselves would like to be loved and understood and forgiven. You know, you sit in judgment many times. Everyone has done that on your fellow man. And sometimes for one act that one has committed sometime during his lifetime, even though he has changed and become a saint sometimes, still that one act falls after him. And if the world hears about it, that one is condemned now and forever. Did you ever stop to think when you do that, look deep into your own consciousness, your own soul, and see what you have done at some point in your life, and I'm sure there is no one here, even as I myself, who cannot look deep in my own life, my own consciousness, and find something that I did that certainly I wouldn't want the world to know about, that I am deeply sorry for, and in the past was tremendously ashamed of. And then think of the other fellow who committed a similar sin, and yet we judge that one forever and a day. And we, if somebody should find out what we have done, want to be understood. We want to be loved still, and we want to be forgiven. So why are we not willing to give what we want for ourselves? And if everybody would do that, and if everybody would put forth the God within themselves, if everybody would surrender themselves to Him and think only of Him, of loving Him, of serving Him, and of cleaning out your own house, it would be the most beautiful world that ever was. And one day it must come to that, because we are going through a dark period now, but out of the darkness, because of the tremendous sorrow, the tremendous tribulation that is going on, man will have to raise his consciousness to God to get himself out of the mess which he himself is creating, because he will bring chaos. He will bring destruction on himself. And he will cry out in his hurt for help. And then he will turn his face to God. If that's what it takes, that's what it takes. But that day will come. And out of all of this darkness that is going on now, nation fighting against nation, brother against brother, all of this killing, this drug use exists, alcoholism, this everything which is even uprooting nature, the tremendous upheavals in the world, all of this one day will bring about the change in man. And there will be the few who will be left on the mountaintop, who will build a new world, a new life, a new dream. And that new world, that new life, that new dream will be of God. And gradually, we will work toward what is called the Satya Yuga Age. That will be the age of life, light, where man will be able to communicate with man without speech. It will be words of the mind, of the heart, and of the soul. And instead of war and implements of war, we will substitute them with the plow and the beasts of the field. And again, once again, God will reign on his world, because it is his world. He's given it to us and we've made a mess out of it. That's never going to change until we change the world within ourselves. When we forget our little selves, and forget to feel sorry for ourselves, and to forget to even feel little. Because if in truth we are one with God, how dare we insult him by having tremendous either inferiority or superiority complexes. God is, and he is all that is. And we must realize that this body that we live in is his temple. It must be kept clean and pure. Not only physically, but the emotions must be purified. The thoughts must be purified. And above all, we must reach out for him, and we must try to find our oneness with him. You do that by looking for his light, and that light is to be found not outside of yourself, but right in the center of your own forehead. And don't forget that when you come face to face with that light, then it will permeate your whole being. There will be a literal explosion. Your streets will be paved with the gold of God's infinite light. Not with the gold that you dig out of the ground, as many people think, because it says that in Revelation, your streets will be paved with gold. Oh no. It's the gold of the Spirit, the light of God, that will come. You will hear the music of angels. You will walk with your heads up. And there will be beauty and grace. And there will be power, and there will be love. And above all, there will be a total and absolute knowledge of man's oneness with his God. That is the world that we're trying to build toward in this group, and to spread this knowledge all over the world. God's name is important. His word is important. His light is the only thing that matters. And each and every one of us are but his children. Each and every one of us are but a speck in eternity, and yet that speck is tremendously important. Some of you may have read about the story of Sri Ramakrishna, when a man came to him who was writing a play, and he felt himself to be great indeed, and he was sounding off, so to speak, in front of Ramakrishna, all the great things that he was going to do and the characters he was going to produced and whatnot. And he asked Ramakrishna, did he not want to take part in his play? Ramakrishna said, oh yes, he did. He said, what part would you like to play? I would like to play the part of the dust at your feet, said he. That's a tremendous lesson in humility. Tremendous. And you will remember the story, some of you, that I told you when Ramdas was in San Francisco, and he was sponsored by Dr. Spielberg there, and they had a large gathering in the Asian Academy. And there were a great many professional men there, and Papa was talking about putting your consciousness only upon God, just speaking his name every moment of your life, keep his name forever upon your lips. One man raised his hand during the question and answer period. He said, well, what are we doctors supposed to do? He said, when we're so busy with patients all day, he said, our hours, our days are taken up. He said, what would you suggest that we do? He said, here you're telling about we should do this every moment. How can we do this? What shall we do? So Ramdas looked at him very humbly. He said, you might try humility. And isn't that so? That is so. From the lips of some of the wise men, in very simple terminology, come some great things, some great words. But there's one thing I would like to do with each and every one of you, and that is to inspire you to seek God first, to take him with you every moment of your life, to turn yourself over to him, every thought, every word, every deed, to put yourself in his hands, knowing that he is your heavenly Father, that he is the supreme Father of the universe, and you being his child are entitled to all that he has, all of the good things of his kingdom, because he is not a cruel father. He is a good father, a loving father, who is waiting with open arms for his children to turn their faces away from the darkness of ignorance and open themselves to the great light, to the great bounty, to the great things that he has in store for them. If we would only realize that, if I can only inspire you to turn yourselves over to him in full measure and to surrender yourself totally to him, accept everything as being his will for you, and to soften your own ego. Stop thinking about yourself. Stop pitying yourself. Stop trying to do everything yourself and let God do it through you and for you. Pity the man who cannot do that. But don't indulge in self-pity. Believe me. And as your consciousness expands, there will come to you many wonderful visions. Now, these may not all come as a result of concentrating in the spiritual eye. They will come through feeling. They will come through a definite and specific knowing inside of yourself with every part of your being that this is the way it is, and these feelings will form pictures, and that knowledge will prove itself. It will become prophecy fulfilled. You may hear things. You may hear celestial music. You may hear someone speaking sometimes, but the feeling is the greatest. To see the light of God is good. To hear the voice of God is greater still. But to feel him is to be one with him, and is therefore the greatest of all. So walk with God. Eat with him. Sleep with him. Live with him every moment of your life, and you will find that you will not only change your world, but that you will attract others unto yourself. And as each one becomes a light on the hilltop to attract others, this whole world will gradually change, and we will be a tremendous army for God. Then will all the turmoil cease. Then will all the cruelty cease. Then will the lust for power cease. And we will realize that the gold of the Spirit, the wine of the Spirit, is the greatest thing we can possibly have from God. We will be God-men and not worms crawling on the earth, subject to someone else's stepping on us every time they put their feet down. Think of it. Reach out for it. Become that. And one day you can stand straight and tall and you can say, I am that I am. And know in truth that you are indeed God in human form.